from meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news. Broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the show. Clint Van Zandt, you'll know, is a former FBI agent, hostage negotiator, profiler, safety expert, author, you name it, he's done it. We're going to bring Clint on tonight to talk about that nutty Canadian from up here, this Luca Magnotta. Talk about his killing, the voyeurism, the internet, the now trying to link him to cases I believe, in California and Florida. But before we get started, Clint, I want to talk a little bit about this bath salts. Now, you know, LSD, meth, crack, cocaine, you name it, you and I have dealt with people on it. Bath salts, whole new ball of wax.
Bath salts really is, as you and your listeners know, it's a really a dangerous synthetic drug. And I guess where it's coming to prominence, number one, it started in Europe a few years ago and came into America. And initially, I mean, you could buy it in little packets in gas stations and every place else, again, because of the label bath salts and a little title, not for human consumption. They were able, the makers of this were able to circumvent U.S. and probably international law all over. But again, it's a drug, Dana, it, depending on how it's made, it gives you this tremendous sense of euphoria. You feel that you're invincible. You feel that you're Superman. And it brings these almost psychotic-type conditions where we saw, as you know, a couple of weeks ago, we had this individual down in Florida, allegedly under the influence of bath salts, eat the face of another man. And we've had a number of situations. We had one up in Maryland where two roommates, one guy cut out the heart and liver of another guy and ate it. So there's a lot being attributed to this, and as much as local, state, and national governments are trying to do something about it, the makers of this, once they hear there's been some type of law passed, they just change a couple of molecules. Therefore, the formula is different than what's been outlawed. And Dana, this is, of the various drugs you talked about, this seems to be one of the worst ones that's out there yet. And people are consuming the damn stuff, and people are dying over it. Notwithstanding, as you know, you can ingest it, you can eat it, you can mix it with a liquid, and people are shooting it up too. And part of the problems, you know, this flesh eating goes both ways. We have individuals under the influence of this that have actually consumed human flesh. And then we've had individuals who have shot themselves up, used obviously a syringe to inject this to get a high, and they have introduced a bacteria, a flesh-eating bacteria that is sometimes consistent with this bath salts. So not only might they wind up eating someone else's flesh, but the bacteria that they introduce in their system is doing these awful things of literally consuming limbs, arms, legs, where if you catch it in time before the person dies, you get them into an ER, they are literally having to amputate limbs because of the flesh-eating bacteria that's being introduced through the injection site.
Clint Van Zandt's here. In fact, Clint, I'm just looking at the newswire now, and I'm seeing another one, a naked man high on bath salts tries to attack a three-year-old girl on Miami Beach playground. And it's going to go on and on all over the United States, Canada. The Canadian government just outlawed it here last week. Yeah. Let's talk about the human psyche here for a minute. What possesses people to want to do this? You know, addiction is one thing, but, you know, Joe and Mary six-pack at home, they feel that, you know, if it doesn't affect us or our family, we'll just ignore it. But it's a big problem.
Well, it probably goes back to, like, you know, when I was in high school or college and people were doing, you know, a drop in LSD, yeah, and they liked the effect that LSD had, and yet There are a lot of people still screwed up today, if not dead, obviously, from LSD. And with bath salts, it's not just you drop it and, okay, for 24 hours I want to consume human flesh and I do all these terrible things and then I snap out of it again. It's not like, you know, doing a marijuana cigarette or something. It stays with you, and for a lot of individuals, a long time. So I think it's still, you know, people who want to experiment with drugs, who want to, you know, have this out-of-body, out-of-mind experience. But not only is it out of your body, but you may, in fact, lose parts of not all of that body.
The politicians who say that the war on drugs is a war that can't be won, is a war that should have never been fought, et cetera, have never been out in the street and have never seen something like this face to face. How do we convince the powers at large, I guess the politicians, the judges, et cetera, that not only this bath salts, other synthetics, drugs, the drug problem itself is a war that should be fought?
Well, it is, and you have this double-edged sword. It's called the media. By the media publicizing, like, say, bath salts we're talking about, and alleged, you know, they've had health agencies in the United States have to come out and publicly proclaim, no, bath salts cannot be administered to somebody dead and raise them from the dead and have them become a zombie. I mean, I don't know what people are eating, drinking, or reading, but, I mean, you know, the dead are not being raised. I don't care how many pounds of bath salts you're knocking down. But I think if the media continues to put this story out, number one, they're going to get the attention of politicians and legislators and ordinary citizens. But number two, it still puts out the hype for that experience, and there are going to be people looking to undergo that experience too. So if, you know, for every positive, there's a negative, and I think we're going to get that from the media, trying to get the story out, trying to save people for themselves. And again, of all the combinations of drugs we've seen over the years, this is one of the absolute worst that I think you can take, and the effects are just going to be so long-lasting. And it's not only what you do to yourself and what you do to others, but again, it's those that are introducing this bacteria into their system that there's no coming back from. I mean, you have to keep cutting off flesh until you get to something that's not infected, and you have people losing legs, arms, parts of their abdomen, trying to cut this away again.
Yeah, it's terrible. Clint Van Zandt's here. Check out Clint's webpage, livesecure.org. Luca Magnotta, we don't often hear, you know, I think of Paul Bernardo a few years ago up here in Canada, but and Luca Magnotta, who, in my opinion, looks a lot like Paul Bernardo, but that's neither here nor there, and is allegedly even dated Bernardo's girlfriend. But nevertheless, here we got a crazy situation. We can take this from several different angles. Alleged to have killed his Chinese roommate, arrested in Berlin, body parts mailed to government agencies and schools. Now Miami or Florida and Los Angeles police are trying to tie him into crimes there. Allegations that these feet that keep washing up on the shore may be connected to him. This is one guy, but I'm not sure if he's all connected to all these other cases. But let's talk Luca Magnotta, and let's start a little bit about the internet, Clint. And I forget the name of the website right now. I had it written down, and I've lost it. But
I know what you're talking about.
This posting online, a murder. I think there was a prosecutor or a lawyer in Montana who tried to phone the Toronto police and advise them. You know,
they blew it off, right?
Yeah. What the hell's happening here with our world?
I know. You know, part of this is there's a term in the States. Maybe it's in Canada. Maybe it's worldwide. It's called a poser. Yeah. You know, it's somebody who poses as something that he or she is not. They act like something, and they're really not. This guy, you know, if you look in a dictionary a year from now under poser, you're going to see this guy. You know, if Freud was here, he would say, well, you know, we've got this this guy suffers from a histrionic personality disorder, from a narcissistic personality disorder. You know, both, as you know, we're talking about somebody who is seeking attention. They need approval. Yeah. You've got this bizarre behavior. They're trying to gain prestige. They're trying to gain vanity. And, you know, when these individuals, depending on histrionic personality disorder, is probably 2 to 4% of a general population, narcissistic individual, although we think there's a lot of narcissists around, a true narcissist is probably about 1% of our population group, probably about 90% of politicians, but I guess that's another story. But when we get a guy like this Magdana, this is someone who for years has been a wannabe. He's wanted to pass himself off as an actor, a porn star, but the way he does it, and I think rightfully so when you bring up the internet, is this guy has at least 70 different Facebook and other type accounts where he writes stories about himself, complimentary stories, trying to pass himself off as somebody else, giving compliments. Well, you know, really, we've got this circular mentality where all he's doing is traveling in a circle, saying, you know, if this guy was Italian, you know, his favorite song would be I, you know, and this would be the only song that he would be singing. And for years, he sung that same song, but not many people were listening to the lyrics. So I think now we've got to be careful and not yep. write this guy off as the world's greatest serial killer. As you know, a serial killer is somebody who kills three or more people with an emotional cooling off period in between. All we know right now is that in a very controlled environment, that these two homosexual lovers, perhaps the Chinese counterpart, his roommate or whatever we would call him, was breaking up with Magdana. So Magdana took the opportunity to tie him up on a bed, to do these horrible things, to stab him with an ice pick. I mean, I had a guy one time stabbed 65 times with an ice pick, and he survived. But, you know, I mean, that's a terrible way to torture somebody. Every time that it's a sharp but very small stab wound that goes in, so by and large, unless you hit a vital organ, it doesn't kill you, but it's a great way to torture somebody. So Magdana was using the ice pick. Then he transitioned to the edged weapon, the knife, and of course then he cut his victim's head off, hands off, feet off, had sex with his corpse, did all these other terrible things to the body. But everything he did, and I think, you know, your listeners got to grasp this too, this was a very controlled environment where he had the quiet, the time to do it, the place to do it. I doubt seriously that this guy is going to be good for a lot of other homicides. There may be at most one or two other, you know, people who walk the wild side emotionally, the same side that he did, or people who had kind of dropped out of society who he may have killed. But as you know, up in Canada within the last 3 or 4 years, there's been at least the feet from a dozen different people have washed up the shore. Right. Shore, and everybody's jumping on these feet and saying, aha, Magnata cut the feet off his victim. Well, the feet that washed up for shore in Canada, if I remember, by and large, they had just become undone from the body based upon the aspect of the water, based upon the body decomposing. They weren't cut. It's just like in California, this a gay guy who was killed earlier this year, and again, his body parts, his feet, his hand, his head were cut off, and the body parts were scattered under the Hollywood, California sign. Well, again, a lot of people jumped on that and said, aha, Magnata, he's been to L.A., he had to have done this. But, you know, one of the things you and I do, Dana, is that we take a look at the way the hands, the feet, the head have been separated. What type of weapon or edged instrument was used? How was it done? And in the California situation, it was entirely different. So I think we've got to be very careful. We want to hold this guy responsible for what he did. And he is looking for a place in the record books next to Ted Bundy or someone like this. But the reality is right now, he's a terrible scourge on humanity. But is he responsible for anything other than his crime against animals, which is killing cats and putting the internets on, a poser yep. on the internet, wanting people to see it, and now posting this terrible video on the internet of him actually murdering his roommate? And realized, Dana, there were literally tens of thousands of people who watched that video. and hundreds, if not thousands, who friended him because of watching that video, like, oh yeah, I like this. So what does that say to us about society? How many people are sitting on the edge of the abyss? They may not jump over the edge like this guy did, but they sit there and applaud his antics anyway.
Well, there's a bunch of screwed up cats out there for sure if they're following this this character.
Yes.
John Mark Carr. Going back to him, and I had a conversation with him on the phone, and I know I've told you this before. I didn't put him on the show, the only time I've ever turned down a guest. Here's a guy that's looking for 15 minutes of fame. McNaughta, obviously a very sick individual, but tying him into these other murders, like I say, I'm kind of like you. I think he's more of a poser situation. But let's turn to the media now again, Clinton, and they're grabbing this story with McNaughta. And I got to admit, I had to think twice about running this tonight, but I figured, well, we might as well. This guy, he wants his 15 minutes of fame. He was searching his own stories in Berlin in an internet cafe, not the sharpest knife in the drawer for sure. What about the media? Is there a time where they need to shut him off and let the courts do their work?
Yeah, and I think that time's now. You know, I've done the story at least twice on NBC on the Today Show, and as you know, that's about 12 million people to watch. And each time I did it, like the first time I said, when this guy was on the run, I said, this guy is not a professional fugitive. He's not a professional killer. He will be caught by Canadian law enforcement or some other international law enforcement agency within 2 days. And while he was caught 24 hours later, he was in custody. And so in the second time, I talked about him too, but both times I've gone out of my way to diminish this guy. I mean, my purpose in talking about him in the media is to stick a pin in his balloon and say, this guy is nothing but a no-good, low-down killer, poser, and someone who is a legend in his own mind but should get nothing more than a footnote in history. And you know, I've run into enough individuals in life who have been serial killers who want to, you know, everybody wants to beat Ted Bundy's record. Everybody feels that, you know, that's the way to rise. Well, this guy, he looked at, and I think he thought seriously about, what's the worst things that I can do? What's the most grisly things that I can do? And then post those on the internet to get the maximum fame, the maximum attention that I can. Again, going along with that histrionic personality disorder, the narcissistic personality disorder. But I agree with you. This is a point right now where the best thing that could happen for the U.S., for the Canadians, for the Germans, everybody else, is to pull the plug on this guy's attention. That's why, Dana, I think he did not fight extradition back to Canada, because he didn't want the story to die. He wanted to continue on a roll. He wanted to keep getting that attention, and therefore he wanted to get back as soon as he can and keep the story live again. And I just wish that all the international media, we would just pull the plug on this guy, or if we do, we talk about him in just the past tense. He's a nut. He's a killer. He's a legend in his own mind. He's in law enforcement custody. Let's move on to the next crime.
Absolutely. Clint Van Zandt's here. The voyeuristic aspect of this, these websites, control the internet, it's impossible. But what about the people that go to these websites to look at the grisly car crash scene, to look at the murder online, to look at whatever? Is there something that can be done, or is this a thing that we just have to live with today's technology?
I think we have to live with each individual. You know, the sites on the internet that most people go to are pornographic websites.
Yeah.
We have seen law enforcement internationally bust websites with a child pornography, with terrible sexual crimes against children that's available on the internet that people still go and they look at. You know, it used to be, as you and I know, people would have to go to peep shows and put a quarter in a machine and turn it, or they'd have to go to a movie, or they'd have to sneak out. Now they can sit in their house and watch this. And And, you know, I want to be very quick to say not everybody who watches pornography is going to be a child molester or a killer. Absolutely not. I mean, otherwise we would have a world full almost of nothing else but that. But it's always been my belief, Dana, that pornography, violent crime against men and women, violent crime against children, that's the bridge. That's the psychological bridge many times for people between a fantasy, a rich fantasy in their mind, and the actual acting out in reality, where that pornography, whatever it be on the internet, gives them the ability to cross, to cross over from fantasy to reality. And to set, you know, when the story first broke and that video was posted, I got on a website and I thought, okay, I'm going to have to talk about this story, so I'm going to have to watch it. And I watched about 30 or 40 seconds, and I thought, Dana, no, I'm not. No, I'm not. I'm not going to let this, excuse me, bastard, put this in my mind, and I have to remember this the rest of my life and link him to it. I'm not going to give that to that guy. And I didn't do it, and I won't do it. And I think that for your audience and for the world, we've got to resist that wanting to know, you know, inquiring minds want to know. We have to resist that sometimes and say, one way we take a stand is by not exposing ourselves to it. You know, that battle against evil begins within ourselves. We can't expect the world to fight the fight if we're not willing to fight it individually.
Absolutely. Clint, as always, thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Talk to you. Bye-bye. Here's a guy with a lot of experience, many years in the FBI, and he's right. Luca Mignotta is a piece of trash. He's a murdering scumbucket. The media, I won't do another story about him. I'll do stories that will try to stop doing stories about him, to tell the media that this guy needs no more time. He needs no more airtime. He has decided not to fight his extradition because he knows the cameras are going to be all over him. He knows that the story is going to, you know, go viral. It already has. And like John Mark Carr, he wants the attention. He wants the people to go to that website and watch it. You know, you feel bad for the family of the Chinese victim in this case. And, you know, innocent until proven guilty in court and all this sort of stuff. We all understand it. We all realize that it has to be done. But Luca Mignotta, you know, maybe Clint and I are wrong. I agree. Poser, absolutely. May he be tied into other cases? Possibly. I'd be surprised. Not very sharp. He was supposed to be some expert at hiding himself, yet he's in a Berlin cafe Googling stories about himself. And when the Berlin cops surrounded him, he gave up pretty quick, like a whimpering little kitten. Not a big time serial killer, not trying to keep up to Ted Bundy or BTK or whoever. Luca Mignotta is nothing more than pawn scum. Hopefully he'll get the justice that is properly served. Too bad in Canada we don't have the death penalty. Life without parole for 25 years, whatever. This guy should not walk the streets of any community ever again. We need to be protected from him, and we certainly don't need to give him anything that he wants, and what he wants is for us to pay attention to him. I'm Dana Pretzer. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with criminal profiler Pat Brown, and we'll continue our discussion on Luca Mignotta. I think Pat will have her opinion on what she thinks of him and this whole crazy bath salts thing, this synthetic drug that the Canadian government finally has outlawed, why people put garbage in their bodies, and is beyond me. To live the high, to have the euphoria, to want to eat someone's face, I don't know. I don't understand it. Anyway, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back here on Scared Monkeys Radio. I want to share some breaking news with you that just came through. You'll remember a show a couple of weeks back where we talked about a possible detention center that was going to be in Crete. The Crete Village Board, I just got this email, has unanimously decided to withdraw from consideration for a detention facility in the village, effectively ending the prospect of the facility coming to Crete. We are grateful to the board recognizing the larger efforts and implications of this kind of project for our community and listening to the many voices from Crete and across the region and nation. In the end, they recognize that it was a bad deal for Crete and the larger of community. The work of many who made sure theirs and other voices were heard helped guide this decision and outcome. It's amazing to watch the collective wisdom come quietly together to do the right thing. So good news to the citizens of Crete. They just didn't want that. It just, you know, when it walks like a duck and talks like a duck and smells like a duck, it's probably best not to go near that duck. Anyway, that's good news for the people of Crete. We're going to be back in a minute with Pat Brown. Okay, we're back. Criminal profiler Pat Brown, always a fun guest to have on the show. Hi, Pat.
Hey, how you doing, Dana?
We're going to talk a little bit about Luca Magnotta in a minute, but I want to get your thoughts on this. Just looking at the breaking news wire, there's another basalt case being reported in Miami. A naked guy, crazy guy, tried to attack a three-year-old on a playground. Of course, we know about the face eater from a couple of weeks back. Synthetic drugs, you know, we've LSD, meth, all that sort of stuff. What are your thoughts on the basalt craze, I guess?
Well, you know, it's unfortunate that they're available in, well, just down the street,
yeah.
You know, and there's nothing illegal about them at the moment. Obviously, dangerous as that. I'm a little concerned that we're not looking at the person behind the person taking the drugs.
Yeah.
In other words, you have to go in and buy basalt. They don't accidentally jump into your hand. So when people say, you know, he's a great, wonderful person, and then he took bath salts and ate people's faces off, I'm like, wait a minute, okay, so let's back up. First of all, was he really a great, wonderful person before he took the drugs?
Yeah.
Secondly, why did he go take the drugs when he knew they were dangerous? Most people do know they're pretty you know, risky. And so we have these two combinations there. I just don't think we're taking totally sweet, wonderful people who just accidentally get bath salts in the system and go commit horrific crimes. So I think we already have a mind that is, you know, already troubled, a personality disordered, who then decides they're going to take the drugs to exaggerate their feelings and have an exciting time, and then they go do something awful. So kind of like, you know, when you drink, you don't become a different person, you just become more of what you are.
Yeah.
So if you're sweet, you just get silly and goofy, and if you've got a nasty temper, drinking will make you nasty,
yeah.
Than you are.
But with the bath salts and how the media have been running the stories, is it a bit of a double-edged sword that, you know, we're seeing and showing the dangers of the same, but are we also maybe encouraging folks to go out and try it?
Well, you know, you wonder who the hell would want to try that
Exactly.
I mean, I don't get it. I guess ever since I was a teen, I always recognize the difference between, you know, doing something that might make you a little happy and silly and doing something that might kill you or make you a crazed maniac. So, you know, we it's not like we don't know that something extremely dangerous before we touch something, and teens know that too. So if there's enough really bad publicity about something, like meth, there isn't a lot of good publicity about meth.
No.
I mean, maybe your friends will tell you take meth and then you can run around for 2 days, you feel powerful and strong, and yeah, woo-hoo. Okay, listen to your friends, but everybody also knows that meth will mess your life up, mess your face up, mess your teeth up, and make you, you know, go places you don't want to go. Well, then why are you doing it? Why don't you just smoke some herb?
Yeah, exactly.
Smoke some weed and, you know, chill out for a while. You're not probably going to become a crazed maniac. When was the last time you heard a person smoke some weed and ate somebody's face off, you know? So, you know, people are choosing their danger, their drugs. Nobody's making you choose that particular drug. So I think it is wise that they bring out the information about the drug and what kind of, you know, effect it could have on the system. They need to get that crap out of there. I mean, it's not doing anybody any good.
Yeah.
Obviously, people shouldn't be ingesting it. But, you know, we have to ask if people do have a level of responsibility. The man who had ended up eating the guy's face off down there in Florida was not a teenager.
No.
He was a grown man. But what was he doing it?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely, you know, that's just the way it should be, and we have to get the message out there how dangerous it is, and hopefully the politicians and the judges and everyone will realize there's a problem here and we need to make it illegal. But
first thing we have to get away from is the concept that using drugs is a victimless crime.
Right.
How many times have we heard that? I'm sorry, that is not true. Using drugs has many, you know, many, many victims of people who use drugs. You know, whether it be not only themselves, but their families, their friends, complete strangers. I mean, there's a lot of victims in taking drugs. You know, there's some, obviously, that create less victims because the drugs are milder, and there's some because the drugs are so dangerous and strong create many victims. So we need to get away from calling everything, you know, all drug taking a victimless crime.
Exactly. What about the politicians and the advocates about the war on drugs, so to speak, being a failure and legalize all drugs and concentrate on other things? What about that? Because obviously it's a war that does need to be fought. We can debate the pot issue, but when you look at it, yeah, it's just getting worse and worse.
Well, somebody's making money.
Yeah.
You know, the old thing. Somebody's making money, so they're not doing a very good job of stopping the most lethal drugs from coming through. Not stopping, you know, doing anything about the worst of it. I think that's, you know, one of our bigger problems, that they just, you know, for whatever reasons aren't doing that. And, of course, one of the other big drug problems we have are the legal drugs that are being prescribed willy-nilly by so-called doctors who have no business being in the medical profession. And, again, there's too much money behind that from the drug companies and from the doctors making the money that they want to deal too much with that either. So we're seeing that, you know, huge wave of prescription drug abuse out there, which, again, lots of victims of that. And it's pretty sad that we seem to become a society where a tremendous amount of people are taking drugs. Because, you know, I kind of remember growing up and you hear, you know, about, you read in history about the Chinese opium dens, you know.
Mm-hmm.
and some strange people, you know, would go off into the opium den. There'd be some weird fellows lying around, you know, doing opium. And it was just this some far-off, strange thing. And then suddenly it's become like, you know, it's just gotten crazy where there's so many choices of drugs and so many people doing drugs. You almost think, is there anybody left who doesn't do drugs?
Yeah.
You know, luckily I could name my own children and myself, but, you know, I'm like, really? Does everybody have to do drugs? What is going on here?
Yeah, you know, you're right. Speaking of crazed, Luca Magnotta, Canadian, crazy Canadian. I debated.
Who was not on drugs at the time he committed his crime, I can guarantee you.
Well, is he a attention seeker? Obviously a murderer.
Oh,
obviously a crazy man.
He's an attention whore. He's not an attention seeker. He's an attention whore. And he's kind of married being a serial killer, you know, mentality with the attention seeking. So he's reached this kind of new level. Just outrageousness. He almost is more like a mass murderer mentality.
Right.
Let me see if I can do the worst, most awful thing that will get the biggest headlines, and my name will go down in history. Kind of like the Norwegian creep that, you know, killed off over 70 people in Norway, all those teenagers on the island. You know, now he's just basking in glory, and he got his day in court, he got to speak, and, you know, there's no death penalty, so, hey, you know, it worked for that Norwegian creep. So Magnotta, I think, is like that, except he's chosen a more personal way instead of being a mass murderer, because he's kind of a wimpy dude. You know, he's picked his personal serial killing power, you know, to express, you know, his crimes to the whole world.
What about I think it's Los Angeles and Miami, and for quite some time here we've had feet washing up onto some shores in Canada, and the media is trying to, well, it must be Magnotta. I don't know. I could be wrong, but do you think we're going to tie him into anything else?
I think we might, because from his little alleged kitten killing videos, which I did see, and which were very unpleasant. And you can see his behaviors in that, how he has a total psychopathic handling of those poor little kittens. You know, he strokes them, he tickles them, he plays with them. Like, you know, you think he likes them, and then, oh, well, now I can dispatch them, and ha-ha.
Right.
And he did the same thing with this with his victim, or this human victim, very nonchalantly committing his crime Like, it was just nothing to him. And there was a time frame in between where he had actually, there was some downtime, and he had actually said to the British press, you know, the kitten's on the end of it, we're going to see humans now.
Right.
It makes me wonder if there wasn't something in between those kittens and this videotaped event, because he seemed awfully calm in practice. One would think he's done it before with a human.
Yeah, and that could be. The websites. The voyeurism, the going and looking at these websites, obviously we can't control the internet, but what about the folks that go on a daily basis and look at this kind of stuff? Of course, we know about pornography, but God, going to
this is pornography,
yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, pornography to me is a matter of degradation of other human beings,
yep.
And the joy we get out of watching them be degraded. You know, there's some pornography which is, is classified as pornography, which is so mild in the sense that you see two people enjoying being with each other, and perhaps you shouldn't be viewing that, but, they're having a good time.
Yep.
Okay, whatever. But then you get the pornography, which is degrading another human being, usually a female in most of these cases, where the woman is being called names and treated badly and abused and sometimes mutilated and a few horrible other things. That kind of stuff is such a negative impact on the viewers, and especially when the younger people start watching it and thinking this is okay, and that watching this, and all these people watching it with me validate that it's an okay thing. The gore sites, which Magnata obviously visited and many people visited, are like that. The people going to them are enjoying looking at the gore sites. It's not a one-time shock thing because you're trying to wrap your head around something. Because I know I did see Nick Berg. Do you remember the
sure.
poor man that was in Afghanistan, I believe it was. It's been so long now.
Yep.
I actually did see that, and
yeah.
Afterwards I wished I had never seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'll carry that, those images, that video with in my head to my grave. It's just one of the worst things I've ever seen. It did not make me want to go watch five more people be beheaded.
No, exactly.
But what you see on these gore sites is people going back trying to find one. Oh, that was really cool. You got any more like that?
Yeah.
They're enjoying this. Well, Magnata enjoyed watching people be mutilated and tortured, and that validated his concept that all people are worthless, first of all, and they're worth killing. And it's cool, and it's okay. I would like to be able to do this myself, and I'd like to show everybody my work. And that's exactly what he did. And when he sent that video in, I personally think the man who runs that website, I personally question that. He isn't a psychopath, too.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to take... He has no remorse over putting it up there. He's proud of it. He says, I don't even check who sends things. I shouldn't have to do that. And I did a good thing by posting it. And, he likes what he's doing. He loves people looking at these horrifying things. And he actually tries to excuse what he's doing by saying, he's helping the world understand the way the world really is. I'm sorry, do not need him to do that. And that is not why people are going to the site to learn about the world. They're going there to be titillated, and he damn well knows it. And he loved the Magnata things. He put it up there, and there were just tons of comments of people thrilled to see that snuff film and to watch that poor man be murdered and abused and killed and all that. And I did see it, so I know what they were looking at. And there was nothing to be joyful about.
No.
I mean, it was just an absolutely horrifying thing. And that poor family, I feel really bad for the victim's family that's out on the net.
Yep.
And they know so many people have seen that happen to their son. And then people are laughing about it and making jokes and, thinking it's cool.
Nothing funny about it, and it's just a damn shame that the Canadian government doesn't have the death penalty, because this guy is a perfect example of why there should be one. Pat Brown.
Yeah, and he knows there isn't one, so
exactly.
He knows he's going to get a lot of celebrity in prison, which everybody always does. Although at least the Canadian press has been better about not doing as much supporting of celebrity. Celebrity killer, shall we say?
It's going to be interesting.
Willing to jump over the border.
It's going to be interesting because the American press will cover it, and it's going to be interesting to see how us how the Canadians will cover it for sure. But anyway.
Well, the Canadians have covered this hugely. I mean, I've done a million Canadian shows since this thing has broken. I've been on air on every one of the Canadian television shows doing stuff about Magnata. So it's not like they haven't been covering it.
Oh, no.
Ad nauseum. But the problem for him is that not only is it getting covered now, but what I've always said about these guys in prison, which really bugs me, is if they would just take them to an island and throw away the damn key, and they would never be heard of again, I'd be okay with life in prison. So my objection is not, you know, I don't feel a need necessarily to kill them. No. I think it's suitable. I like to take Magnata out back and just put a bullet in his head. Personally, I think that just gets it over with quick. I'm all for it, but I understand the society's issues with the death penalty. You know, having to go through the process of making sure you aren't killing the wrong person, and then who gets to pull the trigger, who has to pull the trigger, you know, or put the needle in them. I mean, I can see the issues over it. So if we want to have these issues, I don't know why the death penalty people don't step up to the plate and say, okay, we're asking you to take the death penalty off the table, but we're begging you to put these guys in a place where they're never heard of again, not give them all the rights to have visitors and internet and television and all the goodies they get in prisons, because we don't want to be inhumane to them either. So, you know, pick one or the other.
Yeah,
you know, let them go off and, you know, top rock on an island someplace.
Life in prison should be life in prison. While I've got you for about the next 10 minutes, Pat, let's talk about Sandusky. The trial has begun, so to speak. Where do you think this is going to go?
Well, you know, I've never been too happy about our shower viewer or non-viewer.
Right.
You know, the testimony about, you know, from what's his name? I'm just blanking on his name now. Huh. You know, the guy said he saw, heard the sounds in the shower of Sandusky with a young boy.
Sure.
The slapping sounds of skin.
Yep.
I've never liked his story. I always thought it stunk. I don't know what he didn't see or did see, but he didn't do a dang thing about it. He didn't stop it. He didn't report it immediately to the police. So I'm sorry. I think he's not credible. I always thought he was not credible. And I think the jury may think he's not credible. So I think that may, you know, help the defense. I think Sandusky is his own worst enemy, because everything Sandusky made, when Sandusky made his own statements, that's the time when I realized he was likely guilty. Not from what the other guy said, because his story stunk. And I'm not even sure that, you know, the victims might get on the stand and say, but Sandusky himself has said things that just blew me away. I'm like, okay, all right. If I'm doing statement analysis on what you said, I'm going to say, you're likely guilty because you sound guilty, and the things you say make you, or what guilty people say.
Well, if they run the trial, they need to put on that Bob Costas interview with him and run that as the ending, because here's a guy, you know, call him what you want, you know, use statement analysis or whatever. Here's a guy that he probably doesn't think he did anything wrong.
Well, he knows he did something wrong legally.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah. Oh, absolutely that. But at the time, when we look at this, and I think one of the motions for the victims were to be able to use different names than what they are, and the judge denied that. What do you think about that, Pat, as far as the victims being able to stay anonymous, so to speak?
Well, you know, I come from kind of an old school on that. You know, I believe if you're going to say anything, you have to stand up and say it.
Yeah.
You have to be willing to take credit for saying it. I believe that on the internet. I don't believe in the word anonymous. Never posted anything anonymous in my life. My name has been attached to anything I've ever said. And before and after I became a criminal profile, you know, it's just, I've always believed that if I'm going to say something, I have to stand behind it with my name, even if it's embarrassing, or it brings, you know, it makes me have to, even as a rape victim, I just believe that, you know, it's not, if I've been raped by some other creep, you know, some creep has jumped out of the bushes and raped me, you know, he committed a crime.
Right.
And yes, you know, it's embarrassing to have to stand, you know, have to go through all the grueling thing, but yet, it has to be my word, not the word of anonymous.
Right.
So I personally feel very strongly about people taking that stand and saying, I stand behind what I say. And if I don't have to be embarrassed, I don't have to be embarrassed, you know, and I shouldn't be embarrassed. I didn't do it. Right. I did nothing wrong. And, you know, it's a difficult situation. I'm not saying it's easy for the victims. You know, it's very difficult. I just wish, you know, their families and their friends support them. Support them strongly. But I think you have to stand behind what you're saying.
There's been
a lot
of criticism of the jury system going back to Casey Anthony, et cetera. How do you think that's going to be affected here?
Well, you know, I'm one of the biggest critics of the jury system. I think it's horrible.
Yep.
I think the jury system is just a big joke now. I think this case might be a little bit easier in the sense that we're not talking about confusing physical evidence. With, you know, the Casey Anthony trial that went south, or they called it? The tanning case where the wife supposedly died from doing some tanning product in the bathroom, and the guy just got acquitted on that. I'm
right.
Like, oh, really? Okay. You know, I've seen so many jury trials they obviously don't know what they're looking at. They can't handle the information coming in, and they just, you know, there's people from a bus stop. I'm sorry, but that's the way it is. They're people off a bus stop. You know, they're just regular folks.
Yep.
And they're not trained in the forensics. They're not trained in psychology. They're not trained in crime scene analysis. They're not profilers, and yet they're being asked to do the job of a criminal profiler and a lawyer and a scientist.
Yep.
And they're supposed to judge who's telling them the truth, even though they've never been to school to learn anything about these particular subjects. And I think it's ridiculous.
Yep.
It's just the most ridiculous system in the world now. And we keep bragging about how we got the best system in the world. I'm like, you cannot believe this. You got to stop, you know, you got to step back and say, does it make sense to ask 12 people who know nothing to make judgments on something they know nothing about?
No, I agree.
And have the lawyers come in and try to confuse them and throw experts who say completely different things. And, you know, these jurors are sitting in the middle going, I don't know. And on top of that, they can't even figure out that they don't have to show up for jury duty.
Yeah.
Because they don't get sent a registered letter. Hey, guys, you get a letter in the mail that says you go to jury duty or you go to jail, you rip the thing up, throw it in a trash can. What are they going to do to prove it showed up at your house?
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right.
It's the worst thing in the world. If you don't get a registered letter, they can't prove you ever got it.
Yeah.
And did you show up for jury duty? I'm not saying you're not being a good citizen, but, you know, the whole system is ridiculous. We need professional jurors who understand science, who understand the law, who understand how to reconstruct crimes. There ought to be a huge, you know, a pool of professional jurists who can be brought in who have no concern about who the, you know, they don't have anything dog in the fight, you know. If I'm a professional juror someplace, I'm just going to analyze the evidence.
Yep.
I think we've just gotten to the point where we juries can't handle the depth and the technical stuff on this and all the tricks being played. Now, this case doesn't have that, the Sandusky trial. They're going to have to need to understand psychology. They need to understand predators.
Yep.
They need to understand the victims. They haven't had any training in any of that. So they're going to have to use their best judgment. When we don't know who these people are, some have good judgment. Some people, some of the jurors out there, you know, they've got personality disorders of their own. They can be psychopaths.
Exactly.
They join on the jury, you know. So it's crazy. I think it's going to be a crapshoot,
yep.
Like every other one. It's going to be a crapshoot, and our criminal justice system shouldn't end up with a crapshoot at the end.
Nope. No, it's not justice being served, that's for sure. Pat Brown, as always, thank you, ma'am.
Well, you're welcome, Damon.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
That's criminal profiler Pat Brown, and she's right. You know, a lot of criticism on the jury system, Sandusky. Sure, he knows he did something criminally wrong now, but when he was allegedly raping those little boys, did he think he was doing something wrong? I don't know. A lot of the experts will say, no way, he's a narcissist, he's a pedophile, he's a sexual abuser, and they think they do no wrong. It'll be interesting to see how the jury handles this one. Anyway, that's it. That's tonight's show. I hope you enjoyed it. We call the Scared Monkeys Radio. You can find us at scaredmonkeysradio.com and at scaredmonkeys.com to pick up the show live and podcasts of past shows. Daily commentaries, leave comments, and all that keen kind of stuff. Did I just say keen? Anyway, we'll see you again real soon. Good night.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.